Hello, everybody, and welcome to another beautiful Thursday morning. You're listening to Bhavani at IE Green on the Progressive Radio Network. And I have another exciting show for you today. My guest today will be Max Goldberg. He is the founder and owner of Living Maxwell, which is one of the most widely read organic food blogs in the country. And I want to have him on and tell us about his journey and what he's been doing to really try to educate people and change the way people eat. I also want to talk to you about Friday, August 9th, the third annual Grown on Long Island Day, which is a celebration of all of the farmers and farms that are out on the East End and even Nassau and Suffolk County. All the farms that grow so much produce. I don't know if people realize that Long Island is the largest producer of produce in the country as far as cash, you know, the largest producer of crops that bring in the most amount of money. So anyway, they are celebrating Grown on Long Island Day. There will be plenty of organic farmers there as well as non-organic farmers there. But one of the exciting things this year is there is a seafood throwdown there, and I will be one of the chefs. So myself and another chef, Okima Wilcox, will be competing for the best dish, and there will be six judges, and it should be a lot of fun. So I'm really looking forward to it. I hope many of you can come down for that. Of course, yoga in the gardens continues, and I hope many of you are enjoying the benefits of being able to do yoga or tai chi or exercise outside in the parks. It's really a wonderful way to get some fresh air, some vitamin D, and, you know, be with some other people while doing something good for yourself. So that's a wonderful thing. Tonight is the Slow Food Huntington Board meeting at the Cinema Arts Center at 7 o'clock. And Slow Food, as many of you know, is an organization that's very close to my heart. It's about good, clean, and fair food. And that means good for your body, good for the planet, clean for the planet, produced without pesticides, herbicides, artificial ingredients. And fair is really important, that it's fair labor cost to the farm workers, to the farmers, fair prices to us. That's good all the way around. And then the other part of Slow Food is the pleasure of the table, the part of eating together in community and with family. And that is a part of our society that's just not celebrated enough. Doing it just in a restaurant is just a little too sterile for what can really happen around a family dinner table. So we encourage you to cook. And if you come down to the third annual Grown on Long Island Day, you'll see two chefs cooking up a storm, so I hope to see some of you there. Also this weekend is NOFA, which is the Northeast Organic Farming Association Summer Conference, up at the University of Massachusetts in Amherst. And that's a wonderful, wonderful event. There's over 100 exhibitors, live entertainment, children's and teen conferences, country fair, lots of organic food. Should be a fun time. It's on the campus of the University of Massachusetts. So if you don't have plans this weekend, that's a nice place to go. New England's always beautiful this time of year as well. August 11th, the Golden Earthworm, the largest organic farm on Long Island, is having a big celebration of education. And this is a fundraiser to support the North Fork Education Initiative. And they are having a wonderful farm-to-table dinner August 11th from 5 to 8 out in Jamesport at their farm. And there will be local chefs producing fresh food and seafood, and Blind Bat Brewery will be there pouring some delicious beer, and some of the local vineyards will be there pouring wine. There will be music. So it should be really a great time, and it's a great cause. So if you're available August 11th, go out to the Golden Earthworm. Tickets are $75, and they can be bought at the PeconicCommunitySchool.org/events website. Also, August 15th, I already got my tickets to this. Slow Food New York City is celebrating a farm to fork on the roof. That's going to be at the Brooklyn Grange in the Brooklyn Navy Yard from 6:30 to 10:30. And that should be really a fun evening. We'll be able to see the skyline of Manhattan and pray for good weather. But they have a wonderful menu planned. There will be a vegetarian menu as well as the meat menu that is advertised. I called on that first. And it should be really wonderful. This is a great rooftop farm in Brooklyn, and it's supporting a good cause. So come on out to that. And August 19th is All for the East End. That's a collaborative effort at Martha Clara Vineyards in Riverhead. And it's celebrating many, many different causes that are close to people's hearts on the East End. So to find out more about that, go to the website All for the East End or Facebook page and find out more about that. So before I invite Maxwell Goldberg on, I would like to share a recipe with you. Now, I know most of the recipes I share with you are vegetarian, and many of them are vegan, and some of them are raw. Every once in a while, especially when the season moves me, I will share with you a fish dish, and this is grilled striped bass with a Mediterranean tapenade. And striped bass is really in season right now. You can find it so fresh. I was at someone's house and they had just caught one and they, you know, had it out on the grill and it just inspired me to do a recipe with it. So this is wild striped bass. You can buy steaks or fillets and you want to get four of them depending on what size you like. I usually recommend a 6-ounce fillet, but if you're getting a steak, you need to figure in extra weight for the bone. So you decide what size fillets you want, but this is a good recipe for four fillets. You can and olive oil you want for a drizzle, lemon zest from one lemon, salt and freshly ground pepper, and 2 teaspoons of fresh chopped dill. For the tapenade, you're going to need 2 tablespoons of olive oil, 1 onion chopped, 1 cup of tomatoes diced, 3 tablespoons white wine, 1/2 cup Kalamata olives coarsely chopped, 2 tablespoons capers, 2 tablespoons parsley chopped, 2 tablespoons dill chopped, and 1/2 of a preserved lemon. So in a heavy skillet, you're going to saute the onions in olive oil until translucent. Add the tomatoes, garlic, and white wine and let it cook down for 5 more minutes. Add the olives, capers, and preserved lemon and let that simmer for 3 minutes. Turn off the heat, add the parsley and dill, cover it and set it aside and let it just stay warm while you grill the fish. And so you're going to heat a grill to very hot and spray the grates with some olive oil. Place the fish seasoned side down. Oh, I forgot to say that. You want to first season the fillets. So you're going to drizzle the olive oil on top of the fillets, zest up the lemon and spread the lemon zest on top of the fillets, some salt and freshly ground pepper on top of the fillets, and then spread out the 2 tablespoons of dill on the fillets. And you can actually do that before you make the tapenade, so it has like 10 minutes to sit there and just get in, the flavors can get into the fish a little bit in the marinade. Then when you put it onto the hot grill, you're going to turn them flesh side down, so the skin side is up, and cook it that way first, so that the side that has the fresh dill on it is against the grill grates. And you're going to cook that on the hot grill for about 5 minutes. You can lower the grill just to a little bit so it's a medium high, so it's not the highest. But you can let that cook for 5 minutes, and that's going to put a nice crispy crust on the top of the fish. Then you're going to turn it over and cook for 5 more minutes on the other side. And of course, this varies by a few minutes depending on the thickness of the fish and how well done you like it. So, you know, you can test it by just putting your fork into it and looking to see if the fish is white and flaky. It should stop being translucent and become white. Then you're going to transfer the fish to a warm platter and top it with the tapenade and serve it right away. You can garnish, of course, with parsley, serve it with some fresh lemon, and it's a wonderful wonderful dish. So, I want to bring Max on, but I also want to talk to you just a few things about that are in the news. I'm sure many of you saw in the paper that the first test tube burger has arrived. And, you know, you really think of, is this going to be the way of the future? We're going to be eating meat. Well, not me, but those that eat meat, eating meat that's made in a lab instead of from an animal. And it's a real question. I mean, it, you know, my first reaction is like, ugh, no way. But is it better for the planet? Will it reduce the greenhouse gas emissions that comes from the production of meat? Will it save all those animals' lives that are being raised just for meat? It's a real question. So, you know, I would like to see people, you know, not eating meat, so much meat. But it's a real question as to whether this is the way of the future and whether it's a good way to go. Open to discussion. So let's keep that dialogue going. The EPA has, it has come to people's attention that the EPA is covering up a fracking investigation. It seems that, as we all, many of us know who care about fracking or care about preventing fracking from coming to New York, the fracking industry has been contaminating the water in Pennsylvania, and there has been a whistleblower that announced that the EPA, who had been investigating the contaminated water, has abandoned the investigation and really is failing us big time. You know, it's their job to find out if the fracking industry is polluting our water and our soil, and they're just not doing their job, and the water is horrible. I'm sure many of you saw the movie Gasland or Gasland 2, and we need to all put our voices together and let it be heard that we do not support fracking, that the industry behind fracking is corrupt and don't care about our health. And we just can't allow that to keep going on. So it's going to keep going on if we don't scream loud and clear. So everyone, when you see those petitions, when you have opportunities to march in a rally, please come out. You know, write your congressmen, senators, let people know how you feel. The fracking industry has to be stopped because it's just going to keep spreading and going on as business as usual if we don't let our voices be heard. I'm sure you also heard about the bugs in Danone yogurt. You know, that's just horrible. I don't know how they get away with that. But hopefully now that the word is out, just like when pink slime got out, there was some legislation to stop it. So, you know, Danone certainly will be hearing about how people feel about bugs in their yogurt, especially as their sales start dropping. So spread that word and let people know. So anyway, now it's my great pleasure to invite Max Goldberg on. As I said, Max is the founder of Living Maxwell. He was called an organic sensation by the New York Times and named as one of the nation's leading organic food experts by Shape Magazine. He's the founder of Living Maxwell, one of the most widely read organic food blogs in the country, and Pressed Organic Juice Directory, the world's first pressed organic juice directory with over 800 listings in 5 countries. He's been featured in the New York Times, CNN, Forbes, Shape Magazine, the Huffington Post, and numerous others. As an organic food activist, he's also a partner in the Just Label It campaign and a speaker at trade shows, or industry trade shows. Max runs the Organic Food Industry Group on LinkedIn, where his weekly curated email is read by thousands of organic food CEOs, founders, and executives from all over the world. Excuse me. Max received his BA from Brown University and his MBA from the Columbia University Graduate School of Business. And it's my pleasure to have Max on with us. Max, are you there?
Yep, good morning. Thanks for having me.
Sure. Well, thanks for joining us. So I saw you and first met you last week at the public hearing for the GMO labeling debate.
Yes, it was a very interesting day.
Wasn't it an interesting day? I mean, first off, it went much longer than I anticipated. And both sides presented themselves, and it was just so clear from the people in the room that the public wants this labeling to go through. So what was your feeling about it?
Yeah, well, there's no question about it. I mean, what was the New York Times study poll that came out the other day? Was it 94% of the country wants GMO labeling? And the polls consistently show above 90% of people want GMO labeling. The major disconnect is, you know, the very, very high majority of the population wants labeling, yet a very low percentage of the politicians in Washington want labeling, and that's the real problem, is that we are not holding our politicians accountable, and they are just completely influenced by special interest groups, namely the ag biotech industry, the Grocery Manufacturers Association, who are buying food policy in this country. You know, the Food and Water Watch came out with a report that between 1999 and 2010, the ag biotech lobby has spent $572 million on campaign contributions and lobbying. And what's the result? We've got, you know, they completely own food policy in this country, completely against what the citizens want.
Yeah, it's really scary. I'd like to backtrack just a little bit because your career right now is far from what you started out doing. And I just want to know from you, I mean, having worked in finance for so many years, what inspired you to change careers and start Living Maxwell?
Well, it was kind of a long road. I first started eating organic in 2001. I've pretty much been eating close to 100% organic since then. It was at that time that I spoke to a naturopath, and she told me about organic food, and I always thought that we needed the chemicals to kill the bugs, and, you know, she told me otherwise. And, you know, so my life sort of went on a big change then. And sort of a personal story, I was on Prozac until 2001. I'd been on the drug for close to 11 years and went off in the summer of 2001. And it was at that time that I said, I'm never going to stop eating organic food, and why am I putting a chemical into my body each morning? So it was those things. So life really took a big turn when I went off the medication, and when I got into organic food, that I really started looking at life a lot differently and how I was spending my time. And needless to say, the transition off of antidepressants was very difficult. It was brutal. It took me 3.5 years to recover. I was suicidal, and, you know, fortunately turned the corner, and I actually have a book about my experience, a memoir coming out either later this year or next year about that. So, you know, a lot of things happened sort of in my personal life that really, you know, made me reassess what I was doing and how I was spending my time. And I had always wanted to get into, over the following few years, I had always wanted to get into organic food, and I was looking at different businesses to start, and I never ended up starting one. And then several years later, I decided to start writing about it, and I was like, you know, this is my passion, and I didn't want to start a green blog. I wanted to start something much more specific, much more niche focused, and I just picked organic food since that was something that I really loved. And I literally just started. I just put up the blog, and right around the time that I decided to do it, they had the Natural Products Expo East, which is the second largest organic trade show in Boston, where I was living at the time, literally down the street. I called up the woman who runs PR for the show and said, listen, this is my name, and this is what I'm doing. I said, I don't even have a business card, but can I come to the show? And she's like, yeah, don't worry, just come. And then I went and, you know, had the best time ever and filmed my first video with Luna Marcus, who runs Larry. She's one of the founders of, I'm sure a lot of your readers know, Coconut Bliss, Luna and Larry's Coconut Bliss, the organic ice cream company. And it just kind of grew from there. And then I'd go to the trade shows, and I just decided to make myself known, and that was it. And that's one of the great things about the Internet, is, like, you don't need anyone's permission to go do stuff. Like, you or me, or it's like anyone can put up a blog or have a radio show or do whatever we want to get our voice heard, and that's kind of how I started. I didn't need permission from a newspaper or from some organization to do it, and I just started.
That's great. That's great. It really, you know, when you go onto your blog, you can tell that it's really, you know, this was started from your heart, that it came from the right place. Yeah. What do you think of some of the biggest issues facing the organic industry right now?
Well, clearly the biggest issue is GMO labeling. 64 countries around the world label GMOs, mandatory labeling of GMOs, and the U.S. does not. I mean, you've got, aside from all the countries in Europe and Japan, Australia, you know, you've got countries like Russia, Brazil, India, that China, that have mandatory GMO labeling, and the U.S. does not. And that is, without question, it's an existential threat to the organic industry, and people just don't realize that. They'd be saying, oh, we got farmers markets popping up all over the place, and Whole Foods is growing like crazy, and everyone loves organic, and the industry's growing at, you know, 10-12% a year. And but people don't realize that GMOs present a serious existential threat to the industry. I mean, you look at something like genetically engineered alfalfa. Now, what President Obama did was he animals who for organic milk and meat, they're fed organic alfalfa. So what President Obama did is he deregulated genetically engineered alfalfa, which means the following. Genetically engineered alfalfa, which is under, I think it's like 9% of all alfalfa, he said, okay, genetically engineered alfalfa can be grown anywhere without restriction. So what that means is that the genetically engineered alfalfa is going to contaminate organic alfalfa, and a lot of these organic alfalfa farms are going to lose their organic certification. So the people who are in the organic meat and milk industry, you go ask these people, they are petrified about where they're going to get feed. So the contamination issue is very, very serious. People just don't understand how serious it is. And then you get the disappearance of the bees and whatnot. So, yeah, organic is under serious threat. If it weren't for the some amazing, you know, nonprofits that we have that are constantly suing the USDA and Monsanto and fighting for organic food, I mean, it would be a disaster. So GMO labeling is a real threat to the biotech industry because they don't want people to know what's in their food. If consumers, if the American consumers went to the supermarket and saw a box of their cereal and on the front or the back it said made with genetically engineered ingredients, they'd be like, what is this? And they'd start asking questions, and they'd be like, I don't want to eat something that's genetically engineered where we long-term safety tests have never been done. So they're fighting tooth and nail against genetically engineered labeling.
That was one of the most enlightening aspects of the public hearing that I thought was when I realized that Monsanto controls all the testing that can be done on their product. I thought that's like you know, the fox guarding the chicken coop, you know? It just doesn't make sense. How can they control who's allowed to test their product? And that's why there's no testing really proving the dangers of GMO, because they're not allowed to do it. If they do it and they put out the results, they can be sued.
Exactly. So no independent testing, and the USDA basically takes whatever, you know, safety data that is presented to them, which is completely biased, and they say,
it comes from Monsanto.
Of course. So that's the problem, and yeah, I mean, it's one of the things you may have known this already, but it's a complete revolving door between industry and the USDA and FDA. It's, you know, you work at a big ag biotech company, then you go work at the USDA, and then you're back in industry, then you're a lobbyist for the industry.
Right.
I mean, it's just a big revolving
right.
door. So.
Right.
Nothing really is getting done on a federal level. And then when you and I were in New York State, you know, changes really need to happen on the state level before they're going to happen on the federal level. Or just, I mean, I was at Senator Kristen in New York, Kristen Gillibrand's office, and we met with her legal advisor. And Senator Gillibrand is not in favor of
GMO labeling
on the state level, but she is on a federal level. And why is that? Because it's easy political cover to say, yeah, we're in favor of national labeling, but not on a state level. States shouldn't be able to do this. It's just a total cop-out. It's a complete cop-out. It's political cover. She knows that she won't get into trouble with the lobbyists on the federal level because she's like, you know, I'm not supporting it on a state level, but I am on a national level. And there's so little support on the national level that it's complete political cover. There are no ramifications for her taking that stand.
Mm-hmm.
So we met with her advisor, and her legal advisor basically, you know, just couldn't really say anything and just was smiling and blah, and just, you know, couldn't address this. And
because in the past we've thought of Senator Gillibrand as an advocate, as someone that was supportive of organic and, you know, being on the right side of things. So it's a surprising acknowledgement to actually hear that she is again. And I knew that already, but you know, it doesn't make sense in the way that she has voted in on other issues.
Yeah, no, I think she has done some good things, but you know, the bottom line is, you know, you're either for GMO labeling or you're not. You
right.
Know? It's,
right.
It's, and the fact that she's not coming out and saying New York should come out and New York should have GMO labeling and states don't, and she's saying states don't have the right to label it. I mean, it shows you really where she's at. And
right.
You know.
Another thing that was really interesting at the public hearing is, you know, the people that were from the industry who were saying that we shouldn't allow GMO labeling because of the potential cost involved. And it was so debunked. It was so not true. And I think what they're really afraid of is that, as you said, people won't want to eat the foods that say made with genetically modified ingredients, so that what it will really mean is that the industries will have to reformulate their products to not contain GMO products. And most of these processed companies already make their products free of GMOs for the European market and for the other markets where you say that they're not allowed to have, or where it has to have labeling. And I know, you know, someone that works for Nestle, and I know they make all of their products differently for the European market, because the mm-hmm. Europeans will not buy the GMO product. And so that's really where the cost will come, and, you know, it will just force these industries to change their products, which would be wonderful. So that's where they're saying it will cost them more money, because they will no longer be able to buy the GMO products. They would have to source products that are free of GMO, and that's going to be hard for them to try to find corn and soy products that are free of GMOs, that are not GMO, is harder and harder as the demand increases. So that's also going to be pushing farmers to need to grow more organic or GMO-free soybean and corn, which is, you know, the seeds are going to get harder to find, everything.
Well, that's one of the reasons that Whole Foods is giving themselves 5 years to have all GMOs in their stores labeled. I mean, there are a lot of people who are up in arms about Whole Foods having to wait 5 years, but they've decided, some of their vendors don't need 5 years, and they won't be taking 5 years, but some of the vendors are nervous that 5 years won't be enough. So what the Whole Foods has decided is we're going to give people time to transition. So that's the reason for the 5 years, and that's precisely the reason why, is that it's like they need to get time to get supply online, you know, non-GMO raw materials for some of these companies is just not that easily available in the mm-hmm. quantities that they need it. So, but getting back to your point about the cost, the bottom line is it's going to impact them financially, because people are going to stop buying them.
Right.
And that's just the bottom line, is people are going to stop buying their products, and they're just fighting, doing whatever they can to stop labeling, because they know economically it's going to have an impact on them.
Mm-hmm. That's so true. You know, one of the things with Whole Foods, just to jump back to that for a minute, is so many people shop at Whole Foods because they think everything there is organic and GMO-free already. So, you know, it's really interesting when you think of the marketing that they've been able to do to put that image out there, that people think, oh, you know, it's okay that this is so much more money here because it's so much better for me. And it doesn't mean that everything at Whole Foods is, you know, is organic or GMO-free. And you really have to look at the labels everywhere.
Yeah, it's. I mean, it's true. It's consumers at the end of the day, whether it's Whole Foods or other organic markets, it's really up to consumers to educate themselves as to what they are putting in their body and the products they're purchasing. I mean, there's just no way to get around it. You have to educate yourself as to what you're buying your family, and you can't blame the retailers for the foods that are, you know, on the shelves. I mean,
right.
Everyone's going to take personal responsibility, and the best thing that we can do is to stop buying these products that have GMOs. I mean, John Mackey, the CEO and co-founder of Whole Foods, he's a vegan, and he's like, I was at a speech once, and he says, I wish the customers would vote a lot of the crap off of our shelves. He doesn't like a lot of the stuff that's on the shelves, and he wishes customers would vote it off by not buying it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the most powerful thing we can do is stop buying these products.
Right, right, absolutely. Now, if someone is buying organic, does that mean that they are not getting any GMO products?
GMOs are not allowed under the USDA's National Organic Program. GMOs are not allowed to be used in certified organic products. Now there is contamination. So the USDA, you know, a certified organic product could be contaminated by GMOs either through bees or through pollen or in the air. And there's an independent organization, the biggest one of them all is called the Non-GMO Project. And the seal is the Non-GMO Verified Project. So they go out and they do field testing and for 0.9, anything more than 0.9%, 0.9 of 1%, cannot contain GMOs. So, you know, if a product doesn't have the non-GMO verification label, you know, USDA organic label, USDA organic label, there are no GMOs. There may be some contamination, and there's contamination in everything. There's nothing that's 100% clean of GMOs, and that's why they have a 0.9% standard
right. Of
the non-GMO verification project. Now, the important thing for people to know is that just because you're buying a non-GMO product, in my view, that's not enough. Everyone thinks, okay, it's just non-GMO. Non-GMO has become a real big buzzword. And in my view, it's not enough. Why?
Right.
Because you can still spray the toxic chemicals on these crops. So just because something's non-GMO doesn't necessarily mean it's healthy for you. That's why you want to be buying USDA organic. And if you can get USDA organic and the non-GMO project verification seal, that's the best.
That's the best,
but,
right.
Yeah,
and people ask me all the time, and I say this often on the show, you know, if you have to choose between local or organic, which do you buy? And me personally, I buy organic. If I can get organic local, that's the best. But if I can't, I'm going to still stick with organic because that's the best protection I feel like I have.
I agree with you. I mean, that comes up a lot, especially in New York and in Brooklyn. Everything's just about local. And local doesn't mean, what does local mean? That it's grown within 150 miles, or I think that's what the standard is. Am I supposed to get excited because the farmer down the road is spraying his crops with all these very, very toxic pesticides and insecticides and be really excited because it's local? I'm not.
Right, right. The other thing that people also might not realize, I was at the farmer's market last week when someone was coming around with this public notice that had been slipped into their penny saver. You know, it was a public notice letting people know about the mosquito spraying that was happening all through Suffolk County. Now, you know, out on the East End is all these organic farms, but they're spraying for mosquitoes out there. You know, and there's no control for that, and there's no way to, you know, if you have warning of when it's coming, you know, can you cover your acre with plastic? You know, it's unlikely that can really happen. If it's in a greenhouse, you know, maybe it's protected, but it's horrible because we don't have the right to say don't fly over my land and spray my land. I'm fine with the mosquitoes, you know. I have bats here. I don't take care of the mosquitoes. You know, I don't you know, ladybugs. I do not need your spray, and we don't have control of that. So even when you're buying organic and the farmer is not spraying, you're not 100% free of, you know, some pesticide or herbicide that's on there.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. It's just the chemicals are everywhere.
Yeah.
And you want to do what you can to not consume them with your food.
Right, with you. That's why if everyone buys organic and we push for more organic, there will be more consumer demand and there will be more organic produced and the prices will come down and everything will start working the way we want it to work if everyone makes that same commitment that you're making, you know, and that I'm trying to make. It's really important. Max,
well,
I'd like to take a couple-minute break before we go on, and then I want to talk about some of the other things that you're involved in, like the Pressed Organic Juice Directory and the Organic Food Industry Group site that you run. So don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. Everyone who's listening, I'm talking with Max Goldberg from Living Maxwell. We'll be right back. Don't go anywhere. Hello, everyone, and welcome back. You're listening to Bhavani on the Progressive Radio Network at IE Green. And my guest today is Max Goldberg from Living Maxwell. And we were just talking about the issues around buying organic and GMO labeling. Max, are you with me?
Yes, I am.
Good. So you were just about to say something before I took our break. Do you remember what that was?
I don't remember what that was.
Okay. I wanted to ask if you could share with people the issue with the Naked Juice class action lawsuit. I know, Naked Juice has, hit the market, big time, and they were everywhere. And now we find out they're not as natural as they were promising to be. You want to share a little bit of info about that?
Yeah, well, Naked Juice was labeling their products all natural, and they contain genetically modified ingredients and synthetic ingredients, and one of its ingredients is actually a byproduct of formaldehyde, and they were sued. There's a class action lawsuit against them. All the details about this are on my blog, and what I wrote about a week and a half ago was the settlement, in which they agreed
$9 million, right?
$9 million. They agreed to take their all-natural labels off of their bottles. But if you look into the fine details of the settlement, which they say it's a settlement, but the settlement has actually not been approved by both sides yet. It's been approved by one group of the plaintiff's lawyers, but not both groups of the plaintiff's lawyers. So it's not set in stone yet. But one of the key aspects of class action lawsuits is they designate a nonprofit, which is related to the case, to receive any funds that are not claimed. So, for example, if $9 million is the settlement, and let's say $3 million goes to the lawyers, and then there's $6 million left over, and out of that $6 million, $3 million is claimed by Naked Juice consumers. You've got an extra $3 million that goes unclaimed, and that is supposed to go to a designated nonprofit who is working on that specific cause. So in this cause, it would be accurate labeling. So what the plaintiff's lawyers did, or one group of plaintiff's lawyers, they were, completely compromised, and they agreed that the Mayo Clinic and legal aid groups would be the designated nonprofits. Now, these are fine nonprofits. I'm not knocking these nonprofits. They don't work for accurate labeling at all. And the goal is to really reform the system. And so to have the nonprofits benefit from these nonprofits, so the nonprofits would benefit from the settlement of the lawsuit, and that the company is really trying to do the right thing. So these lawyers, who were completely they wanted to do what Naked Juice wanted, and to get the settlement and to appoint nonprofits that were not working for accurate labeling. So the article, what I wrote about, is we've since launched, and it's already done, on. We, Food Democracy Now, which is a major, major non-profit in the organic sector, who works for accurate labeling and GMO labeling, we submitted, I think it was like 31,000 signatures to the court to try to get them nominated. The other thing is that the lawyers agreed not to freely speak with the press about the settlement. And it's like, how can you really inform consumers about the settlement and where they can apply to get the money if you can't speak freely with the press about it? So, you know, while it was a major step to getting a food company to agree to take off their all-natural labels, they still were not going 100% to do the right thing, which is, you know, par for the course for all these big food companies who just don't want GMOs to be labeled at all.
Mm-hmm. You know, you always have to be wary when a new product enters the market with such a bang. You know that their parent company has to already have inroads into these food markets, because otherwise, you know, smaller companies are starting at farmers markets and, you know, little mom and pop shops. They're not starting, you know, in the center shelf. I mean, shelf space is such a high commodity in these supermarkets and Whole Foods and everywhere, that when a new product gets into the market and has, you know, front row shelving, you know, you want to look into the parent company, because it's just, you know, it takes a long time for something to grow like that. And Naked Juice just kind of like appeared and took off, and, you know, I mean, people were buying it all over the place, just thinking it was this healthy thing. So it's
it's owned by Pepsi.
I know.
And Pepsi donated $2.5 million to defeat genetically modified GMO labeling in California last year. Last year's California's Proposition 37. So this is the company behind Naked Juice. When you're buying Naked Juice, you're supporting Pepsi, at Pepsi, who's a company who's spending millions to defeat GMO labeling.
Right. Right. Yeah, so many companies that you would not expect, like Muir Glen, put money up for the, you know, against the GMO labeling Proposition 37. I'm still boycotting them now. You know, it just, I mean, that's hard for me because I love their product. And, you know, I was just so disheartened when I saw the different companies that supported the defeating of the Proposition 37. It was just terrible.
Right.
Exactly. So tell me about your Pressed Organic Juice Directory.
Well, the Juice Directory is a listing of over 800 places, 5 countries around the world that sell pressed organic juice. Now, pressed organic is obviously organic, and then pressed is using a special type of hydraulic press. It uses thousands of pounds of pressure and increases it's a superior extraction method in terms of nutrients and minerals, and it also reduces the oxidation. So when you use a juicer with the blade that spins around that most people have in their house, it oxidizes very quickly, so you need to drink it immediately, and this process of using a hydraulic press reduces the oxidation significantly. So several years ago, I'd be traveling to the big organic trade show in Anaheim, California each year. I'm like, you know, where can I get pressed organic juice? It's like, I travel, where can I get it? And I was like, I don't know, you go online and you can find a few places. And I said, you know, there's got to be a place online where we can find, when you travel, you can find out exactly where to get pressed organic juice wherever you go. So the directory spawned out of a personal need that I had, and I figured that other people would want this information as well. The pressed organic juice business is absolutely booming, especially here in New York City, where you can, you know, almost get it on, you know, every single corner, whether it's at an actual juice store or in some type of market. And it's the fastest growing.
Can you share a few locations in New York where you can get organic pressed juice?
You can get it at Organic Avenue. You can get it at Juice Press. You can get it at Blueprint Sales. I think they're in hundreds of locations in New York City. Suja is, and you know, Blueprint and Suja are at Whole Foods nationwide. And so those are sort of the bigger players. But if you go on my directory, you can find, you know, hundreds of places in New York City and throughout the world where you can get pressed organic juice, and it's pressed juicedirectory.com.
Mm-hmm.
And I curate every single listing that goes on there. So, you know, some of these juice companies are certified organic, but some aren't. And so I make judgment calls based on how they're marketing themselves, if they get on the directory or not. I've had some companies, when I first launched the directory, were absolutely furious with me that they weren't on the directory. And I said, you know, these are the standards I have. It's not organic when available, it's organic. You know, it's not like...
Ooh. Right, you make you don't have a certain juice if you can't get it organic that day.
Yeah, I mean...
They're trying to do that with organic labeling, too, you know, that you're allowed to have, you know, if tomatoes aren't in season when you're making one of your products and you're using regular GMO tomatoes, that it could be in there. And, you know, the organic standards have to stay strong to not allow that.
Right, so that's kind of the standard I've had is, you know, minimum 95% similar to the USDA's rule in terms of organic, and that's the threshold to get on there. So it's got to be pressed, it's got to be organic, and you have to have a minimum of a green juice, because I'm not really interested in going to get a pressed organic orange juice. Well, that's great. It's like people who really drink a lot of juice, we want green juice. So the minimum threshold was pressed and organic and a minimum of a green juice.
Mm-hmm. Great.
So
that's definitely needed.
You know, well, thank you. We've gotten a lot of good press out of it, and the feedback's been fantastic. And, you know, I've had some people write me and say, I plan meetings around your directory, I plan my traveling around your directory, because, you know, people who are healthy don't take vacations from being healthy. And so when they travel, they want to, you know, eat well and drink juice, and that's the way the world is going right now.
Right. You know, and I have not really heard the differences between pressed juice and, you know, I mean, I drink organic juice all the time and green juice, but, you know, I have my old Acme juicer. And, you know, I did not really know that there was a different nutritional value, or that, you know, using my juicer was less.
I absolutely, it's not meant to discourage people from using their juicer, because using your juicer is a good thing. I mean, to be juicing, period, is good. If you have a centrifugal juicer, the ones with the blades that spin around, I think the one that you're referring to, the key thing to remember is drink it immediately. You know, you just don't want to wait. The longer you wait, you're going to get, it's going to oxidize and you're going to lose nutrition. So that's the key thing. The other key thing about juicing at home is make sure you're using a fruit and vegetable wash. The only one that I recommend is from Vermont Soap Organics, and there's a link to it on my shop and my site. A lot of the fruit and vegetable washes on the market have an ingredient called grapefruit seed extract, and grapefruit seed extract is a very controversial ingredient. It's been linked to cancer. The one from Vermont Soap Organics is the only one I use and recommend, and it's like, would you ever take a shower and not use soap? And it's like, no. And it's like, well, what about your produce that gets dropped on the supermarket floor, and who knows how many different hands have touched it. So this kills a lot of the germs and the bacteria on your produce.
Can you say the name of it again?
Yeah, it's Vermont Soap Organics, and there's a link to it on my shop, on my site, on livingmaxwell.com. It's a fruit and vegetable wash.
Hmm. That's very interesting.
One of my favorite companies, and their products are fantastic. I've been writing about and praising this product for years. They recently came on after so much time that the founder of the company said, "You've been so nice to us, I want to advertise on your site." But if you look back on my blog, for years I've been praising their products. I just love what they do.
Mm-hmm. Now, what about people who are making juices in a Vitamix where it keeps all the pulp? What do you see as the pros or cons of that?
Yeah, I'm not a fan of it. I mean, I think once in a while, is it going to hurt you? I don't think it's going to hurt you. But, you know, there's this huge green smoothie craze, and I'm just not in favor of it. I mean, why do I say this? I just, for some things, I really look at what the experts are saying. And who do I classify as an expert? I look at the people who are treating cancer from green juice. You look at Max Gerson, MD. He was a doctor in the 40s successfully treating cancer through pressed organic juice and other different protocols, but he was using a Norwalk juicer in the 1940s, and his daughter, who has carried on, he's like, no, we're not into green smoothies, we're into green juice. We're like, you can get your fiber in other foods, and you look at Brian Clement, Dr. Brian Clement out of the Hippocrates Health Institute in Florida. He treats thousands and thousands of cancer patients, and he is not in favor of green smoothies. He's in favor of green juice. Again, you can get your fiber from other sources. So the green smoothies you do, the Vitamix or the Blendtec or blender is breaking down, is basically doing the chewing for you, and you need to be doing that chewing for you, with your mouth.
Mm-hmm.
So with the juice, you don't have that fiber. You don't have that issue. But you still
right.
want to keep the juice in your mouth to get maximum interaction with the enzymes in your saliva. So I'm a fan of green juice, not green smoothies.
Right, right. Yeah, I know. I bought myself a Vitamix, and then I felt the same way. It just filled me up too much, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I like the juice as a juice, and I just didn't. It just wasn't as satisfying for me to have all the pulp in there.
I'm in favor of definitely of green juice. And when you look at these cancer experts and how they're treating the cancer patients, they're giving them pressed organic green juice. They're not giving them green smoothies.
Right. Right.
13 green smoothie juices a day.
So before we run out of time, I would like you to have a moment to tell people about your upcoming book that I know you've been working on.
Yeah, it's finished. It's now I'm in the process of figuring out how I'm going to get it to the market, and it's a memoir. I was on Prozac for almost 11 years, and as I mentioned at the beginning of our call, I was on Prozac for almost 11 years. I went off in 2001, took me 3.5 years to recover, and this is really about my story, about before, during, and after the antidepressants, and what happened to me, and, you know, there's approximately 30 million people in the U.S. on antidepressants, and there's a lot of people out there who just want a different way to live. They're looking for a more natural, holistic approach to living rather than taking a drug. So this is really about my story and what happened when I went off. This is not a how-to. This is just talking about me and what I experienced and sort of the lows that I hit and the mistakes that I made and really what happened to me, because when I went off in the summer of 2001, I didn't have anyone saying, okay, Max, these are the things that are going to happen, and this is what you should be prepared for. I didn't have anyone who said, okay, here's my experience in going off, so I would have some idea of what it would be like. I had no idea. And that's really what it does. It gives people and their families an inside look as to what happened when someone went off of this drug.
Right, right. Well, that's...
So, If you sign up for the newsletter on my website, I will be sure to keep you posted as to when it comes out.
Tell people how to do that.
If they just go to livingmaxwell.com, and on the right-hand side, you can just sign up for my newsletter, and I'll give you my top five inexpensive ways to shop organic.
Great. Okay, everybody, do that. And while you're at it, go on to my website at bhavani@iegreen.com. If you have any questions, send that to me. My website is iegreen.com. And Max, it's been a pleasure to have you on. You're really an inspiration to so many people, and I am going to check out your pressed organic juice directory.
Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate the time, and it was great meeting you at the GE labeling hearing in New York, and thank you again for having me.
Sure, and I'm sure our paths will cross again. So have a great rest of the day. And everyone listening, have a great rest of the day, great rest of the week. Enjoy your weekend, and I'll be with you again next Thursday. Have a great one.